New to the living healthy lifestyle or a healthy living veteran, this is your place for honest answers.
Naturally Savvy.
With registered holistic nutritionist Andrea Donsky.
And health journalist Lisa Davis.
Hi, I'm Lisa Davis. My wonderful co-host Andrea is away today. Whenever my daughter has her good friend over who has a nut allergy, we always go and get Made Good snacks. So I was beyond thrilled when I found out that they are now a sponsor. It's so exciting. You know, we really take pride in having sponsors on Naturally Savvy, things that we believe in, things that we use. So Made Good snacks, let me tell you about them. They're baked with good intentions, like organic ingredients, whole grains, and hidden veggies. Gotta love that. They're free from common allergens such as peanuts and dairy. They're packed with nutrition and awesome taste. Granola bars, mini bites, Rice Krispie squares, cookies, and more. So grab some today. Pack them in your kids' school lunch or in your purse. And you can learn more at madegoodfoods.com. I'm super excited about today's guest because I've been saying this for years, that exercise is medicine. That is the name of the book, How Physical Activity Boosts Health and Slows Aging. And isn't that what we all want? The book is by the wonderful Judy Foreman, who joins us now. Hi, Judy.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Doing pretty well. About to go swimming after this interview.
Oh, that's great. Well, I took an hour hike with my dogs. And
oh,
I live in a, I bore everybody by telling them a lot that I live in a town that's a third conservation land. And it's fabulous because with the, like a 2-minute drive, I'm in 100 acres of woods. And other than when people yell at me because my dogs are off leash, I'm pretty good. I'm pretty good about that. I try to find places where there's nobody so they can run around, because I think dogs really need to run around just like we do. So
that's right.
It's so important.
Yeah.
So one of the things that grabbed me right away is I loved when you talked about how to read this book. You write, I had a pretty negative view of aging, but what I learned about biology put a whole new spin on aging for me and took some of the sting out of it. Okay, without giving too much away, Judy, because I want people to get the book Exercise is Medicine, what were some of those things that helped take that sting away?
Oh, yeah, I definitely want people to get the book. But it definitely did take this thing away for me to do, not completely away, but substantially away. I learned so many good things at the molecular and cellular level about what exercise does for us that it made me feel more in control of the aging process. Like, you know, there are definite, clear-cut, really basic things that exercise does that really mitigate against a lot of the downsides of aging, from mood control to better memory, to better heart function, to very, very basic genetic and molecular things. So, basically we evolved to move. We did not evolve to sit in front of screens all day or sit in front of the TV. We have the genes of our ancestors who were running around hunting for dinner. And those are our genes. We don't have genes that make us sit all day. It's abnormal to sit as much as we sit.
Right. And sitting kills is one of the chapters in your book.
Sitting kills is chapter 3.
Yes. You know, it's funny because years ago, I got a treadmill desk and I used it for a long time. And then I was noticing that I have some knee issues, and between doing hour hikes every day with my dogs, the treadmill desk, I couldn't really do both. But yet what's nice is I have a desk that goes up and down as part of it. So
yeah.
I just stand. Not all the time. Like I have to be honest, I'm sitting at the moment because I did an hour hike. But then the rest of the day,
at the moment too.
Okay. The rest of the day I'll be running around and cooking dinner and doing errands and, you know, whatever I need to do with my daughter, and we have to go get new shoes. And so I will be busy, but I think for so many people, you're right, with the way the screens is these days, they're just sitting at work and then they come home and they sit and then they sit. It's not good.
Well, I think people don't know, and then I wouldn't have known unless I had done the research for this book, you know, why sitting is so bad.
Right.
And I mean, there are actually quite a few biological reasons why it's so bad. But one of the main ones is kind of intuitive. We tend to get fat, and it's not just the fat you can pinch with your fingers. It's this deeper visceral fat that surrounds your organs and your belly. And, you know, it used to be thought that fat was just kind of a blob of inert sort of stupid tissue, but it's actually a very active biological metabolic organ. It pumps out chemicals. It pumps out essentially hormones, and these hormones are called pro-inflammatory cytokines. And all that means is these chemicals produce like a low level of chronic inflammation all over the body, and that is the real driver of a lot of bad things that happen later in life, including, you know, hardening of the arteries and diabetes and neurodegenerative things. The underlying cause in many cases is chronic inflammation. And that's what happens when you sit too much.
Yeah, and that is so scary. You know, one of the things in the book, The Heart of the Matter, you write Catherine, and I swear this name's familiar because I lived in Santa Cruz and I went to UC Santa Cruz. Catherine Beers was 85 when I spoke with her not long ago from her home in Santa Cruz, California. She cheerfully admitted that she looks her age, but then you talk about how she doesn't act it. But this is what grabbed me. I love this. After a few years, she hungered for a small town in which to raise her kids and drove around California looking for the perfect place. She found it, Santa Cruz. And every day my husband and I, because we're on the East Coast, say, when can we go back to Santa Cruz? So I just wanted to throw that in.
Was she? I think she was
she
the
ended up
mayor
being the mayor.
Santa.
Yes, I was there
she
in
was
the 80s.
Mayor.
Okay,
yeah.
That's why. It's like, why is that name? Yes, okay.
Yeah.
But tell us about her and her experience.
Oh, she's amazing. She did the Boston Marathon. I live in Boston. And she did the Boston Marathon, I think it was 2018. And she probably did it last year as well. And she was the oldest person to do it. She did it. The marathon is 26.2 miles and a very hilly course. That's why Boston is kind of one of the classic challenging marathons. I mean, not that they're not all challenging. But she did it in 7 hours and 50 minutes, and she then stayed the night in a hotel in Boston and then got on a plane the next day for France and did like a 4 or 5 week hiking trip with a friend. And she told me that she, you know, she runs every day regularly, and then when it's training season, she ups her game. And then she'll go play bridge or games or something with people way younger than her at nighttime, and they're fading and she's not. she really has the energy and the spirit of a much younger person. And that's true of a lot of these older people I interviewed who are big athletes. Not that I'm advocating that everybody has to be a super duper athlete, but it's really inspiring to talk to these people. And I kind of scatter these little vignettes all through the book to keep us going.
I love that. It's so interesting to read about people who are doing well. You know, my father-in-law is going to be 87 this year. And for the last 11 years, he went to baseball fantasy camp and played with guys half his age for a week. This was first year that he felt like, you know what, I'm not up to it. But he's still riding his bike around. He still comes over every day and hangs out with my daughter and his granddaughter, you know, and plays games and does stuff. And he's amazing, but he's starting to slow down, but just starting at almost 87.
Yeah. And, you know, It's never too late to start. People sometimes think, oh, you know, I'm 70 and I've never done exercise. Why should I start now? It always pays to start. And you can start slow and gentle and, you know, just walk around the mall or something. but it's really, truly, biologically never too late to start. I mean, you're probably not going to make the Olympics if you're 90 years old. But you can improve your health at every phase of the game.
Yeah, you really can. You know, I love the science in the book. I loved reading about this. I thought this was really surprising. You write resistance training, colloquially known as weightlifting, doesn't make muscle cells increase in number. That would be hyperplasia, which is a hallmark of cancer, not hypertrophy.
Right.
So talk to us about this, because you talk about the mitochondria when you talk about when you're, you know, looking at endurance and how exercise forces muscles to build more mitochondria. And then give us a little bit of what's going on inside of us.
Oh, well, okay. It gets kind of sciencey, but it's really fun. Exercise mass produces mitochondria. For people who may have forgotten their high school biology, inside our cells, we have these little miniature things, these organelles, little baby organs inside the cells, and those are called mitochondria. And there's an interesting story about how they wound up in our cells, but we don't have to go into that. But what they do is they produce energy. The food you eat and the air you breathe gets all put together chemically inside the mitochondria, and the mitochondria pump out a specific chemical, which is the energy molecule, and it's called ATP, which stands for adenosine triphosphate, and that's the power, that's the energy. And when we exercise, when a muscle contracts, it triggers this whole chain of molecular events. The control mechanism for that is a little chemical called PGC1-alpha, and that tells certain genes in the nucleus of the cell and certain genes in the mitochondria to work together to make more of the little protein complexes that make up what they call the electron transport chain. All of that just means, there's no quiz on that, but all of that just means that when your muscles contract through a chain of chemical events, you end up with more mitochondria. So you end up with more ATP, which is more energy. And if you're losing motivation to exercise, just walk around the block and think, oh, I'm making mitochondria. And I find that a very motivating thought. So
I love that. Now, where do the telomeres come in? And we've talked about it before, but people who aren't familiar, tell us what the telomeres are and how do we make them longer?
So telomeres are like, if you picture shoelaces, there's usually a little plastic thing on the end of shoelaces called an aglet. But anyway, it's just a little chunk of plastic at the end. And its job is to keep the shoelace from unraveling. And the telomere is the exact same thing on a chromosome. It's a little specialized chunk of DNA that sits on the end of chromosomes and keeps the chromosome from unraveling in a sloppy way during cell division. And we're all born with nice, strong, very long telomeres. I mean, babies have, really healthy telomeres. And as we get older, the telomeres get shorter and shorter. They basically shrink. They call it telomere attrition. And that means, this is a controversial area of science, but basically the idea is the shorter your telomeres are, the older you are. It's kind of like a marker for aging. There have been some correlational studies, not cause and effect, but correlational studies that seem to suggest that people who exercise more have longer telomeres. Whether they have maintained good telomere length or actually restored telomere length is another hot topic of science and very, very controversial. But basically, there seems to be a correlation between exercise and maintaining longer telomeres. But as I said, this is a very controversial area of science, and there's scientists who disagree with that, but some big correlational studies have found a connection.
Oh, interesting. Well, speaking of science, looking at Chapter 7, Boning Up, you write, when hormones decrease with aging, you can exercise all you want, but you will still lose bone mass, says the aptly named Linda Bonewald, a cell biologist who heads the Indiana Center for Musculoskeletal Health at Indiana University. Quote, almost every study says that exercise is beneficial, she adds, but does it block bone loss? No. Does it block the effects of aging? No, though it can delay those effects. Let's talk a little bit about how important exercise and especially weight-bearing exercise is for our bone health.
Yeah, I think we've been kind of fed a little bit of magical thinking here in the past decade or so that, if we did weight-bearing exercise, we could build strong bones. That's true in adolescence, but as we get older, we do lose bone mass. You can slow the rate of that loss by exercise, but you can't really rebuild lost bone that way. What you can do that's really important, though, is build muscle and improve balance through exercise. And what that does is help you prevent falls. And it turns out that falls, not osteoporosis per se, falls are really the big problem because that's where you break a hip or whatever, and you get concussions, and broken hip winds people up in a nursing home very often, and lying around waiting for your hip to heal can lead to blood clots, which can lead to death. I mean, a broken hip is a very serious medical event, and that comes from falling. I mean, and granted, the stronger your bones are, the less likely they are to break if you fall. But the real way to prevent that is to have good enough balance and strong enough muscles, especially leg muscles, that you don't fall in the first place. So, I mean, that's really the key. easier said than done, but very important.
Yeah, it definitely is. We had a wonderful neighbor named Jane years ago, and she seemed fine. And all of a sudden, she broke her hip, and then she passed. And we were like, what?
Yeah.
Like, we'd heard of that, but I hadn't known anybody, and it's just heartbreaking.
It really is.
In Chapter 10, I love this. It takes guts, exercise, and the microbiome. Burly Irish lads. You have a great sense of humor. They were burly young lads, members of a professional Irish rugby team, perfect physical specimens, exactly what the researchers needed for the first study of its kind in humans. The researchers from the... I'm not going to try to say this word, TEAGASC, Food Research Center in Ireland, were interested in, well, the men's poop. We talk a lot on the show about how important it is to take care of your microbiome. And we're usually talking about, you know, getting your prebiotics and probiotics. And I think we've touched on exercise a little, but I thought this was fascinating. Tell us a little bit about this.
Yes, I mean, this the microbiome is kind of big news in the last, you know, 5 or 10 years. It's kind of like we didn't really know about it that much before. But these are all the bacteria that live in our intestines. And there have been a lot more studies in terms of diet and the microbiome than there have been on exercise and the microbiome. But there's preliminary data that exercise can also help the microbiome. The goal is to have a lot of diversity in the types of bacteria that live in your gut. And exercise is good. The other thing that's really good is a high-fiber diet. There was an interesting study that I quote in that chapter among Africans and African-Americans. And the Africans who lived in Africa tended to have a much more high-fiber diet with less, you know, less of the processed stuff that we Americans eat. So they made the African-Africans eat like an American diet, and the African-Americans eat a more high-fiber diet, and their microbiomes changed accordingly with the high-fiber diet yielding a much better, healthier microbiome. So that's, I mean, sometimes it's hard to get enough fiber, but, you know, that's really a goal, too, as well as exercise. I think they kind of work together.
Well, speaking of exercise, which we've been talking about, the time goes by way too fast. I just want to mention the last few minutes. Chapter 15 is just amazing. The nitty-gritty Q&A. I just want to read some of these questions so people will run out and get this book. What's the basics exercise recommendations for adults? What is moderate activity? What's intense? How can you determine your fitness age? What is VO2 max? If you stop exercising, how fast do you lose fitness and strength? How fast can you regain it? What is high intensity interval training? So is HIIT better than continuous training? Can you be both fit and fat? You know, I'm of the belief that you can be a bit. I mean, I know people who are heavy, but they exercise a lot and their blood, like their numbers are good. And then I know skinny people who don't do anything and their numbers aren't so great. But in the last few minutes, what do you think about that for people who haven't read yet?
And well, obviously the best is to be fit and not fat. It's still being debated. I mean, if you're heavy, certainly it's better to exercise and be as fit as you can be despite being heavy. But excess weight is really bad in and of itself because of the thing we were talking about before. Fat is a metabolic tissue and it pumps out all these pro-inflammatory cytokines.
Sure.
I mean, there's no way that obesity is a healthy thing.
Maybe I wasn't thinking like obesity. I meant just like, you know, 5 or 10 pounds. You're not like, you know, super heavy.
But that can be your body mass index can still be in the normal range. You really don't want to hit that obesity level. There's a great debate, but I think, you know, I mean, nothing is absolute in science, but if you're fat, keep exercising, you know. But also if you're really out of shape, which you may be if you're fat, you should, you know, check out with your doctor, you know, what you can do. I mean, you don't want to just leap up off the couch and do a marathon. You know, you sort of got to build up to it and be sensible. But exercise is really the key to a healthier life, regardless of your weight.
Yeah, it's so true. And there's 38 wonderful questions just in that chapter alone. What are your favorite types of exercise before we have to end today?
I swim. I'm 76 years old, and I'm on a swim team. And I've been, I used to jog more, but the old knee thing kind of gets in the way, although I still do the treadmill. But I find being on a swim team really fun because, you know, we have great talks in the ladies' locker room, and it's just fun. And it's also easy on your joints. You know, you can really swim without doing a lot of damage. I mean, you can overuse your shoulders, obviously, but basically it's kind of easy on the body. But people, you know, the best exercise is whatever exercise you enjoy or can talk yourself into enjoying. I mean, for some people it might be walking in the mall. For others it might be kind of walking around the living room couch instead of sitting on it while you're watching the news. I mean, it's just, you know, whatever you can do that gets you out of bed and off the couch really has huge benefits. So it doesn't have to, you don't have to join a gym. You don't have to buy $400 sneakers. You know, it doesn't have to be a big, huge deal. Just, you know, kind of get off your rear end and do it. To put
You're
it bluntly.
So right. Yes. And if you aren't allergic and have the, you know, you can afford a dog or have the time, the energy, the money, get a dog, go to the pound. That's my, because I tell you, like, this time of year, I mean, today's a nice day, but when it's, you know, 15, 20 degrees, I'm not going to go hiking if I didn't have a dog. I mean, you know, so I just think it's such a great thing. But exercise is medicine, how physical activity boosts health and slows aging. The wonderful Judy Foreman. Tell us all the ways we can find you and your book online.
Well, Amazon is sort of the easiest. It's called Exercise is Medicine. You can also buy it through my website, which is judyforeman.com, J-U-D-Y-F, as in Frank, O-R-E, don't forget the E, M-A-N.com, judy@judyforeman.com. And there's a bunch of links to click to places to buy the book. It's not hard to find. And even though I'm the writer of the book, I find when I even just look at the title sitting here on my desk, I think, oh, God, it motivates me to exercise. So I re-motivate myself every time I look at the book cover.
That's
hopefully wonderful. That will do it for your readers, too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, my husband, I had to like, where's Judy's book? He's like, I have it. Well, I need it. I didn't finish it yet. You know, and he is avid. If it's 15, he'll bike when it's like 15 degrees. He's nuts. He runs, he bikes, he does yoga. He never misses it. And he's in amazing shape. So I want to thank you so much for coming on. I want to thank our sponsor once again, Made Good. Don't forget, they are snacks baked with good intentions. They have organic ingredients, whole grains, hidden veggies are free from common allergens such as peanuts and dairy. They're packed with nutrition and awesome taste. I always get them for my daughter and her friends who have peanut or dairy allergies or not, really enjoy them, which is great. Grab some today and you can find them. I get mine at any natural health food store or Whole Foods, or I think even, you know, some of the regular grocery stores as well in their natural food section, madegoodfoods.com. Thanks so much for listening to Naturally Savvy Radio. Please rate, review, and subscribe, and follow us on social media at Lisa Davis MPH, at Andrea Donsky, at Your Radio MD, and at Naturally Savvy. Thanks for listening and stay well.